My conspirators are sitting on the second row over there. The young man waving his hand is Dax, and he works with a consulting agency that we collaborate with. And a beautiful young lady next to his left there is my wife, Sharon, and she's a professor, as you can see, in the College of Health. We work together as a team. In fact, it's, some people ask, do you really co-teach, which we do, co-author and co-research together, and have managed to stay married? How do you do that? And the secret is that she's a really outstanding qualitative evaluator, and that's not my bag. And so we each are able to carve out our own little interests. But we do a lot of these projects where we work cooperatively between the College of Education and Human Services, which I'm in, and where I primarily teach in the evaluation area, and in the College of Health, where Sharon works in both public health and geriatrics, and also is an evaluator. This program that we are reporting on today is one that looked at peer mentoring. We were trying to help the elementary school kids, the peer mentoring program was, on a variety of school factors, as you can see there, beginning with promotion rates, working down through disciplinary referrals. We also were hoping to see some personal behavioral and attitudinal changes in the kids, behavioral dealing with substance use, and self-confidence in interpersonal relationships. While it wasn't a focus of the project, we thought since this project involves high school kids, mentoring elementary kids, we thought we would see if there was any effect on the high school kids also. So we kind of threw this one in about leadership skills. We find there's a mentoring is a rather unique kind of leadership. And the kinds of kids that were doing were the mentors really were not, we didn't go out and get your, valedictorian, salutatorians, really top-notch kids to be mentors. So some of them were. We really were just getting kids who themselves could use a little boost up the ladder to be the high school mentors of the elementary kids. The elementary kids were enrolled in the St. Johns County Public School District. For those of you who visit Florida, you may know that as St. Augustine. The mentors, as it says, there were high school students in the same school district. It was this is a report today on the 2 years of the program. It started out with a little bit of a planning first-year grant, and we ran some pilot sessions with the kids and field-tested our data collection instruments and ran all of those nice validity reliability checks in a year prior to what we're reporting on here. That lasted about 6 months. The program itself is kind of traditional in the way mentoring programs go. The agency within the agency, you saw in the first slide probably, that agency called EPIC, which is a community services organization there in St. Augustine, was the agency we were working with directly. But within EPIC, there is a program that really specializes in mentoring and youth, helping youth. It's the Big Brothers, Big Sisters program, which I'm sure all of you are familiar with. So the training that they received is really designed and organized, put together by Big Brothers, Big Sisters, as well as with a lot of instruments. So once the kids receive some basic coaching on how to be mentors, these were all volunteers, of course. They were matched with an elementary child of the same sex, either a fourth or a fifth grader. The EPIC group ran the program entirely. None of us were really involved in the actual operation of the program. We're really the evaluation research team. The evaluation design is a convenient sample. Everyone were volunteers. There really isn't a comparison group that we had. We were looking to see changes over time, sort of a pretest, post-test, with multiple measures, so that we look at them over first year and then year and a half and then over 2 years. So we had multiple years there. You'll see when we get into the data that we used previous year data in many instances as if it were a pretest, so we use that as a baseline. In some instances, like with the leadership instrument, with the drug survey, things of that sort, the personal, I don't want to call them personality, those kinds of assessments that weren't school data, we actually gave them when they were assigned to the program, and then 6 months later the first year, at the end of the first year, 6 months later, then at the end of the second year. So you get that continuous measure design, as you're probably very accustomed to. These are the list of the instruments. The elementary substance use survey is my wife's primarily is the author of that one. She developed it more than 10 years ago to use in elementary schools. She does a lot of work in the substance abuse area in the community, and so that's been an instrument that's been around for quite some time. It's designed to tie in with the secondary instruments that many of you are familiar with, like the Monitoring the Future survey, if you're familiar with that instrument. As well, as you may know, Florida, like many schools, has a substance use survey that administers statewide. And so this is sort of an elementary version of that, looking at the same kinds of drugs, alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, inhalants, the kind of gateway drugs that young kids, 4th and 5th, 6th graders, tend to get involved with more. We asked the mentees to self-assess themselves on their self-confidence in a personal relationship instrument. That was an instrument that was really developed by Big Brothers Big Sisters, part of the mentoring program. And the same thing with the high school mentors evaluation assessment. The youth leadership inventory is really my instrument. My other hat, other than being an evaluator, is I'm in a department of educational leadership at the university. And I've been very interested in a long time for developing instruments to measure leadership skills in young kids, as opposed to simply spending all your time working with adults who are being trained to go in administrative positions. The first three questions that we were trying to look at used measures that were pretty much set by the state agency that basically said, well, this is the question you have to get this money, you have to try to find an answer to. I see heads nod. Yes, you're familiar with that. And they also have a standard, a target. They wanted a 25% increase in the number of matches that lasted 12 months, in the number of mentored students who demonstrated improvement, and in the students who had reduced disciplinary referrals. The last set of questions are really what we and the project developers negotiated. And we were looking at reduction in substance use, self-confidence, interpersonal relationships, and as I mentioned before, the leadership. A couple of quick slides about who's in the program. Most of the kids were regular kids, although there was a pretty good number of exceptional education students, about 26%. We had 25 kids in the first year in the program. You'll see later our goal was 60, but we didn't quite realize that. And the second year of the program, we had 23. And when I say 25 and 23, I'm really talking about kids who had a matched mentor-mentee relationship for at least one school 9-week grading period. We had some that were less than that, and we really didn't think that was long enough to do anything. We didn't count them in what we're reporting here. So the 9 weeks is sort of the minimum relationship. And that's part, while we had more than 48 people, we didn't have but 48 people that had at least 9 weeks. Most of them, as I say, were 4th and 5th graders. Not much difference there. While this may be of interest to us in research, evaluating the effectiveness of the program, the majority of the students were African-American students. What's interesting is that's not reflective of that particular school district. The African-American population in the St. Augustine Area School District is about 9%. And so we had an unusually high number of African-American students, as well as the ESE population that we talked about earlier isn't 25% either. It's probably somewhere around 4. So this is not a typical population for this school district, but it was a typical population for students at risk of failing school. And so it was appropriate for this particular population. What this really talks about was how many students were in the program for 12 months. The Big Brothers, Big Sisters organization, the funding agencies felt like they really wanted to see what happens when these things last for at least 12 months. The problem we ran into with their 12-month criteria is that school districts don't normally operate for 12 months. And so that's why the ratio is really, really low there. As I say, some of them were average was about, from my page here, most were sustained between 4 and 6 months. So with a normal turnover in schools, we had a vast majority of their mentee relationships were 4 to 6 months, but we didn't get many that were 12 months. I think we had two students, I recall, who were two fourth graders who finished 9 months and then came back the next year and finished 9 more months. So we actually had a couple of students out of the 48 who were in there longer than met the 12-month criteria. Looking at the impact of the mentoring program on grade point average, basically we saw that about half of the students improved their grade point average. We didn't particularly like, I must confess, the idea of measuring grade point in fourth and fifth grade. But here again, the funding agency's criteria were quite certain that that's what they wanted. And so we worked with the school district to try to convert the grades that they actually awarded in fourth and fifth grade into a traditional kind of A is equal 4 and B is equal 3 kind of scale. They don't really do things like that in every subject. But again, we worked with the school district to help them interpret that for the students, and we did that. So we see some gain academically for mentoring. As you know, if you know anything about mentoring programs, historically this is a common thing to see. They have been proven quite effective for helping academic achievement. So we exceeded our goal there. When we look at unexcused absence, we exceeded our goal in unexcused absence. About 76% the first year, had a real drop off the second year. And the first time I showed this to a group a few weeks ago, they asked, well, why the big drop off the second year? Well, as you know, absence, or attendance, I should say, in the elementary school is not something that the school has a lot of control over. It's more a factor of how many childhood diseases go through your school that year and which ones and when the flu outbreak starts and that sort of thing. And it just so happens that we had a lot of absentees that were excused that year also, as well as a lot that were unexcused. We're not real sure, to tell you the truth, exactly why we had such a reduction in unexcused absence. When we get over into the third question about disciplinary referrals, we did exceed our target goal there both years. We were hoping to have, if you see on the left, I have a mouse pointer up there. There I did. Over here on the left, this is what the funding agency wanted us to have. That's our GREPA target. They want us to have 16 mentees and a 30% success rate. As you see on the right-hand side, we had 17 mentees and 18 mentees the second year. But our success rate was more than double the 30% minimum that they wanted. So we had a rather successful project in that regard. We just didn't have enough kids in the project. So we did have quite an impact on discipline. I found it interesting that the median numbers of discipline referrals for these elementary kids was the same for both years. The range was very different. The first year, as I recall, the range was from 1 to 5 referrals. And the second year, the range from 1 to 10. But the median was the same both years, 3 referrals per child. And so when we looked at the data, we discovered the reason for that wide range is there was one child who had 11 referrals. and 10 referrals. So we had that one child who threw the range all out. But overall, it was successful. We were happy in the sense that there wasn't significant changes in drug use. On the other hand, while we had thought going into this program, because, again, we do a great deal of work in this area and Northeast Florida and really all over the eastern United States in substance use. And we surveyed literally thousands and thousands, probably on, I don't even know anymore, probably close to 100,000 fourth and fifth graders over the years in substance use. So we expected with this population a high use, but it wasn't there. If you look at those pretest scores, you see there in the 80s of not use. This is the percent of students who have never used. So it was just kind of an atypical population. And we did have some increase in alcohol during the problem. I don't know where you're real aware of those statistics, but the average age for tobacco alcohol use in the United States and public schools is 12. That's when it first starts. So, in the self-confidence area, there was no significant difference in the scales. This is a scale where 1 is low and 5 is high. While there was a plus every year in every category, you can see there in year 1 we had a plus 0.32, and year 2 we got a 0.66 in self-confidence. Interpersonal relationships, 0.08 and 0.68. So we did have some gains, but they really, really didn't turn out to be statistically significant gains. The mentors themselves, we began to look at their leadership skills, and this is the area that the project wasn't focused on, but it's one of those wonderful serendipitous findings. There was a statistically significant gain in leadership skills among the high school students who were mentors. So in summary, we didn't get enough kids enrolled in the project. The project failed to meet that gain. We did exceed our targets in the core academic subjects of reading mathematics with GPA. We did realize a reduction in unexcused absences. We did realize a reduction in disciplinary referrals. There was no significant change in substance abuse. There was no significant change statistically. Can't say that again. Statistically significant change in self-confidence, school attitude, and personal skills. And there was a significant change in the leadership skills of the people who were serving as mentors. And something that's not reported in here, I'll tell you, is that our mentors were mentored themselves by an adult member of the community. We had everything from sheriff's officers to county commissioners and things of that sort. And we hope at a later point to be reporting on the relationship between the adult mentor and the high school mentee in another session. If you would like to know more about this project, piques your interest in any way, I think all of you have a copy of the handout, which has all the slides. If you don't, there's one on the back table. And there's our contact information, Teresa Andrews, who's the Director of Community Services with EPIC, and myself and my wife, who led the evaluation team. Thank you.